Have you ever noticed how a period of really intense emotional exhaustion can, like, literally make your joints ache?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or why, after a highly stressful life event, completely normal sounds like a door creaking or dog barking or even just your phone buzzing suddenly feel physically jarring.
Right, like they actually hurt your ears.
Exactly, like they send the shockwaves straight down your spine.
Well, it's interesting because we tend to categorize emotional pain and physical pain as, two completely separate buckets.
Right, like totally different thing.
Yeah, we treat a bad back with physiotherapy and a traumatic memory with talk therapy, and we basically assume never the twain shall meet. But the reality is the human nervous system simply does not respect those artificial boundaries.
Which is exactly why today we're going on a mission to shortcut your path to being well informed on this. We're looking at one of the most profound mind-body crossovers out
It
there.
really is massive.
It is. We're diving into the biological link between psychological trauma, specifically conditions like PTSD and complex PTSD, and physical chronic pain. We want to understand the origins, the precise neurological mechanisms, and what modern treatment actually looks like.
And we have a really robust stack of sources guiding us today, which is great.
Oh, yeah. What are we looking at?
We're pulling from a huge systematic review published in the journal PLOS-1, plus clinical data directly from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and some incredibly detailed neurobiological research on how trauma physically alters brain structure. Our goal is just to synthesize all of this so you can see what's actually happening under the hood.
Okay, let's unpack this because before we can understand why an emotional wound translates into a physical ache, we kind of have to look at the baseline wiring of the brain,
The
right?
foundation.
Yeah. So when someone goes through a severe trauma, what is actually happening to their internal alarm system?
So a traumatic event or a series of events essentially forces the brain into a permanent state of survival mode.
Okay.
Biologically, your amygdala, which is the brain's threat detection center, just becomes totally hyperactive. It is constantly scanning for danger.
Even when there isn't any.
Exactly. And meanwhile, the prefrontal cortex, which is the area responsible for logic, reasoning, and emotional regulation, that part gets actively suppressed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the logical part of the brain that would normally say, hey, it's just a door creaking, we are totally safe, that part is effectively taken offline.
So it's a bit like a car alarm that's been calibrated to be so hypersensitive, it starts blaring just because, like, a leaf brushed against the windscreen.
What's fascinating here is that analogy is biologically spot on. The system is just constantly misfiring.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. And the PLOS-1 systematic review was actually very specific about where this faulty wiring often
Oh,
originates.
really? Where?
They found that childhood trauma, specifically cumulative emotional abuse and emotional neglect, has a really profound long-term impact on developing chronic pain later in adulthood.
Wait, emotional neglect, not just physical abuse.
Exactly. We usually think of physical abuse leaving the lasting mark, but this data shows that the chronic stress of an emotionally neglectful environment physically alters the development of a child's nervous system.
Which I guess brings us to a crucial distinction in our sources, right? The difference between standard PTSD and complex PTSD or CPTSD.
Yeah, that's a really important distinction to make. Standard PTSD is often tied to a single terrifying event, like a car crash or a natural disaster.
Right.
But CPTSD arises from ongoing, inescapable interpersonal trauma.
So like a chronic environment.
Yes. Think of a child living with a highly unpredictable caregiver or an adult trapped in a domestically violent relationship. The threat isn't a one-off event. The environment itself is the threat.
Wow.
And a core feature of CPTSD that the researchers highlight is called disturbances in self-organization, or DSO.
Okay, disturbances in self-organization sounds incredibly clinical. What does that actually look like for someone just, trying to go about their Tuesday?
Right. In everyday life, it manifests as severe emotional dysregulation and a deeply negative self-concept.
Okay.
The person experiences this pervasive, inescapable feeling of being unsafe. And not just in their physical environment, but inside their own skin.
Oh, that's heavy.
It is.
Yeah.
Their baseline operating system is essentially rooted in shame and hypervigilance. The brain never gets to put down its shield.
So if my brain's shield is constantly up, how does that emotional hypervigilance actually create the physical sensation of chronic pain?
That's the big question.
Yeah, like what is the actual bridge between the emotional experience and the physical ache in my lower back or my shoulder?
The bridge is a biological process called sensitization.
Sensitization.
Okay. Your nervous system fundamentally adapts to this constant perceived threat by becoming hypersensitive. And this happens in two distinct stages.
Okay, what's the first stage?
First, there's peripheral sensitization. The actual pain receptor fields in your body, like the nerve endings in your tissue and skin, they expand.
Wait, they physically grow?
Yeah, they physically grow and become much more reactive to stimuli.
That sounds uncomfortable enough on its own, but the sources emphasize that the real issue is central sensitization, right?
Yes, central sensitization is the big one. That's where the entire architecture of the central nervous system, so the spinal cord and the brain, actually changes.
Changing how, exactly?
The central nervous system starts amplifying sensory signals. Instead of filtering out minor discomforts the way it normally would, it magnifies them.
Okay, let's make sure we are crystal clear on this, because honestly, this is where a lot of people get dismissed by the medical system.
Oh, constantly, yes.
When someone develops what the sources call nociplastic pain, which is this pain arising from altered nerve signaling, there is often no actual tissue damage, right?
Correct. The MRI comes back clean. The joints aren't inflamed.
So wait, if there's no tissue damage, are we saying this pain is just a psychological manifestation? Is it like all in their head?
Absolutely not. And I'm so glad you asked that. The pain is 100% biologically real. The nervous system is physically misfiring. Think of it kind of like a severe allergic reaction, but happening in the nervous system.
Like how an immune system overreacts to something harmless.
Exactly. If someone has a peanut allergy, their immune system overreacts to a harmless protein, right?
Mm.
And it causes a real life-threatening physical response.
Right. The throat closes up. It's real.
In central sensitization, the nervous system is doing the exact same thing. It is having an allergic reaction to totally normal sensory input.
So the input is harmless, but the physiological response is just catastrophic.
Spot on. At a cellular level, we actually see a massive imbalance of neurotransmitters.
Oh, really? Which ones?
Well, there's a buildup of glutamate, which is an excitatory chemical. It basically tells neurons to fire.
Okay, so glutamate is like the gas pedal.
Exactly. And at the same time, there's a severe reduction in GABA, which is the inhibitory calming chemical, the brakes.
So the gas pedal is stuck to the floor and the brakes are cut.
Yes. The brain is flooded with signals to react and completely starved of signals to calm down.
Wow.
Furthermore, the brain actually reduces its descending inhibitory signals.
What does that mean?
Normally, your brain sends signals down your spinal cord to block minor pain signals from ever reaching your conscious awareness.
Like your clothes touching your skin or a mild ache.
Right. But in central sensitization, that blockade is lifted. The pain signals just flood right into the brain unhindered.
That is wild. And this mechanism provides so much context for the shared vulnerability model the sources discuss.
Yes, the shared vulnerability model is key here.
The idea is that having a highly sensitive anxiety system basically makes a person genetically and biologically prone to developing both PTSD and chronic pain, right?
Exactly. They share the same underlying faulty wiring from the start.
Which naturally leads to the mutual maintenance model.
Right, because once a person has both conditions, they just feed off each other.
Mm-hmm.
A patient might avoid moving or exercising or socializing because they are terrified of triggering their physical pain.
Which makes sense. You don't want to hurt.
But that chronic pain serves as a constant, inescapable physical reminder of their trauma, which then spikes their PTSD symptoms.
It's a trap.
It really is. The fear avoidance behavior locks them into this vicious loop where both conditions maintain the other.
And one of the most fascinating and honestly kind of tragic casualties of this loop is the breakdown of interoception.
Oh, interoception. Yeah. Yes. That is a huge piece of the puzzle.
For those who don't know, interoception is your brain's ability to perceive physical sensations inside your body, right?
Correct. It's your internal dashboard. It tells you when you're hungry, when you're thirsty, when you're exhausted, or even when you just need to use the bathroom.
You know, that makes so much sense when you think about anyone going through intense grief or like a terrible breakup. The first thing people say is, I just completely forgot to eat.
Exactly.
The body totally shuts off that dashboard light because it's so busy dealing with an emotional crisis.
And in a traumatized brain, that dashboard light stays off permanently.
Permanently.
Yeah. The brain is so obsessively scanning the external horizon for threats that it completely tunes out internal signals.
Oh, wow.
A person with CPTSD might not even realize they are hungry or need water until their blood sugar drops so low their hands are literally shaking, or they're on the verge of fainting.
So if the volume knob on external pain is turned up to a 10, but the internal dashboard telling you to eat and drink is turned down to 0, what does the clinical data actually show about the day-to-day reality of living with this?
The statistics from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs are pretty sobering, honestly.
Yeah, what do they say?
Between 25% and 80% of individuals diagnosed with PTSD also experience chronic pain.
Up to 80%. That is massive.
It is. And looking at the reverse, in chronic pain populations, up to 20.5% of people with widespread pain have comorbid PTSD.
So we're talking about millions of people living with this dual diagnosis.
Millions, yes.
And the physical toll extends way beyond just joint pain or muscle aches. The sources note that chronic trauma literally alters the structural integrity of the brain.
Yes, structural changes. We are talking about measurable changes in the white and gray matter of the sensory cortex.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because those structural changes are what drive the severe sensory hypersensitivity we touched on earlier, right?
Exactly. When the gray matter in the sensory processing areas is physically altered, the brain misinterprets safe, everyday inputs.
So things like bright fluorescent lights in an office?
Or the hum of a refrigerator? Or a light tap on the shoulder?
Just totally normal stuff.
Right. The traumatized brain perceives these as active incoming threats, and it triggers a full-blown physiological stress response.
Which just completely drains a person's ability to experience joy. The neurobiological research points to a profound dopamine imbalance in trauma survivors, leading to a condition called anhedonia.
Anhedonia is awful. It's the literal inability to experience pleasure.
So it's not just feeling sad.
No, not at all. Yeah. It is a profound emotional flatness. Food loses its taste. Hobbies just feel like chores. Socializing feels like walking through wet cement.
Because the brain's reward center is essentially starved of dopamine.
Right, because all the neurological resources are being diverted to the threat detection centers.
And that emotional flatness is compounded by the fact that these patients almost never get a good night's rest. And we're not just talking about tossing and turning here.
No, not just a bit of insomnia. Brains locked in a state of hyperarousal struggle immensely to enter deep, restorative REM sleep.
Which is crucial for healing, right?
It's crucial for processing emotions and consolidating memories. But when a traumatized brain tries to enter REM, the overactive amygdala often triggers vivid, terrifying nightmares.
Oh, man.
And many patients also experience sleep paralysis. The mind wakes up, but the body remains chemically paralyzed. It leaves them feeling trapped and vulnerable, which, of course, only reinforces the trauma.
That sounds absolutely terrifying. And then there is a phenomenon specific to complex PTSD highlighted in the PLOS-1 review, pain flashbacks.
Yes. Pain flashbacks.
This is where the whole concept of the body keeping the score becomes undeniably literal.
Very literal.
Because a trauma memory isn't just visual or emotional, is it? The body physically replays the somatic pain of the original trauma.
Exactly. A patient might experience the exact burning sensation, or the crushing chest pressure, or the sharp pain of an injury that occurred decades ago.
That's incredible.
The memory is stored not just in the hippocampus, but literally in the physical tissues and neural pathways of the body.
Think about the sheer exhaustion of living like this. I mean, if you were fighting a war on two fronts, actively battling intense emotional trauma while your nervous system bombards you with chronic physical pain, Your psychological reserve is going to be completely decimated.
Depleted. Patients have nothing left in the tank.
Yeah.
And the clinical data shows this dual burden leads to dramatically higher rates of pain catastrophizing.
Pain catastrophizing, like assuming the worst.
Yes. It's a cognitive distortion where the mind immediately spirals into the absolute worst case scenario. So a twinge in the back isn't just a muscle spasm. The brain convinces the patient they're going to be paralyzed.
Because the alarm system is broken.
Right. And this leads to greater physical disability, severe isolation, and tragically, massive spikes in healthcare and opioid use.
Of course.
Patients are desperately trying to numb a pain that originates in the central nervous system, and standard painkillers simply aren't designed to fix central sensitization.
They're targeting the wrong mechanism.
Exactly.
So if standard painkillers aren't the answer, what is? I mean, if I'm a listener checking all these boxes or watching a loved one go through this, how do we actually intervene in a nervous system that is fundamentally misfiring?
Well, historically, the medical community really struggled with this. They first relied on what's called the sequential model.
Which is treating one thing after the other.
Right. A doctor would tell a patient, let's treat your PTSD completely, and once you are mentally stable, we will send you to a pain clinic.
But the flaw there is glaring, isn't it? Treating complex trauma takes years.
Years, yes.
So if you leave the chronic pain unmanaged during that entire period, the pain worsens, which triggers the trauma, and the patient never achieves mental stability anyway.
Exactly. It's a doomed approach.
Oh.
So then the system pivoted to the parallel model.
Okay, treating both at once.
Yes. A patient receives treatment for both conditions at the exact same time, but from completely different, uncoordinated providers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you see a pain specialist on Tuesday and a trauma therapist on Thursday.
For someone whose psychological reserve is already empty, managing multiple appointments, conflicting advice, and entirely different treatment philosophies sounds like a fast track to burnout.
It really is. It causes huge dropout rates. Mm-hmm. Patients just give up. Which is why the current clinical consensus points to the integrated or combined model as the absolute gold standard of care.
Integrated model. Okay, what does that look like?
This involves a single, unified team of professionals treating both the psychological trauma and the physical pain simultaneously, using coordinated evidence-based therapies.
So they actually talk to each other.
The providers talk to each other. The treatment plan is totally cohesive.
The sources highlight specific therapies that thrive in this integrated environment, right? Cognitive processing therapy, or CPT, is often used.
Mm-hmm. Alongside CBT for chronic pain.
But the neurobiological research really shines a light on EMDR eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
EMDR is amazing.
I have to ask, how does moving your eyes back and forth actually rewrite a pain response?
It's fascinating because it tackles the biology directly. During a session, a patient holds a traumatic memory in their mind while simultaneously tracking the therapist's fingers moving side to side or maybe holding buzzers that vibrate in alternating hands.
Okay.
This bilateral stimulation heavily taxes the working memory of the brain.
Because it's distracted by the movement.
Exactly. Because the brain is forced to focus on the external bilateral movement, it physically cannot dedicate enough resources to the amygdala to sound the panic alarm.
Oh, wow.
So the memory is recalled, but without the physiological flood of terror.
Mm.
Over time, the brain files the memory away as a past event rather than a present threat.
Which directly lowers the central nervous system's baseline arousal.
Yes.
That is brilliant. Another therapy the literature points to is TCTSY Trauma Center, trauma-sensitive yoga.
Yeah, TCTSY is really gaining traction.
No, at first glance, suggesting yoga to someone with severe chronic pain and CPTSD sounds a bit dismissive. Like, how does stretching fix a misfiring nervous system?
I get that.
Yeah.
But it is entirely different from a standard fitness class.
Okay.
TCTSY specifically targets that loss of interoception we discussed earlier. It is not about flexibility or getting a workout.
What is it about then?
It's about gently teaching the brain how to notice and tolerate physical sensations in the body again, but safely.
Safely.
Right. The instructor doesn't give forceful commands or, you know, adjust the patient's body. They offer choices. Like, if you want to, you can notice how your feet feel on the mat.
So it's about agency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It slowly rebuilds the patient's trust in their own physical vessel.
But finding the right environment to do this incredibly vulnerable work seems like half the battle. If a patient walks into a sterile, cold clinic and feels rushed, their nervous system is immediately going to reject the treatment, right?
100%. The therapeutic relationship itself is part of the neurological intervention.
You really need someone who gets it.
You need a practitioner who fundamentally understands this integrated, trauma-informed approach. Like, I was actually reviewing the clinical approach of Greg Jones recently.
Oh, right, the practitioner based down in New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly. He's a certified practitioner down there. And his entire framework is built on creating an accessible educational environment rather than a clinical salesy one.
Which is so important.
It's vital. Yeah. Because if the patient doesn't feel a deep sense of warmth and emotional safety in the room with a practitioner, their prefrontal cortex won't come back online.
You have to find someone who prioritizes that safe harbor.
You really do.
And alongside professional therapy, the sources also emphasize the power of practical daily actions. It's not just what happens in the clinic, it's what happens in the living room.
Yeah, everyday life matters heaps.
Right.
Routine is an incredibly powerful tool for a traumatized brain.
Because trauma makes everything feel chaotic.
Chaotic and entirely unpredictable. So establishing a strict daily routine, waking up at the same time, eating at the same time, creates predictability.
And predictability signals safety.
Exactly. Safety to the nervous system.
Journaling also plays a massive role, right, in processing those complex emotions rather than storing them in the body.
Mm-hmm.
As well as just giving yourself permission to aggressively limit exposure to known triggers while you are actively healing. You don't have to force yourself into overwhelming situations just to prove you are getting better.
No, you really don't. Recovery is a marathon. It requires celebrating the smallest wins.
Yeah.
A day where the sensory hypersensitivity is slightly lower, or a night where you get an extra hour of unbroken sleep, is a massive biological victory.
I think if you're listening to this right now and realizing you are nodding along to almost every symptom we've discussed, this amount of information might feel incredibly heavy.
It is a lot to take in.
It's daunting to realize your nervous system has structurally changed, but the ultimate takeaway from all this neurobiology is actually a message of profound hope.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the overarching theme of this entire body of research is neuroplasticity.
Right. The brain's ability to change.
We have spent this deep dive exploring how intense trauma neuroplastically wires the brain into a prominent survival mode. But neuroplasticity is a two-way street.
It works in reverse.
Exactly. The brain remains remarkably malleable until the day we die. Through these integrated therapies, bilateral stimulation, and consistent safety, it is entirely possible to rewire the nervous system.
That is so encouraging.
You can physically rebuild the pathways for calm, restore interoception, and genuinely reduce central sensitization pain.
So, to synthesize everything we've uncovered today, from the PLOS-1 review, the clinical data, and the neurobiology, psychological trauma is not just a ghost haunting your thoughts.
No, it's not.
It is a profound, measurable biological event that physically alters your central nervous system. Emotional abuse, neglect, and severe stress create real, physical, chronic pain.
And understanding the mechanism of central sensitization completely dismantles the stigma around this.
It validates exactly what you are feeling.
Yes. You are not making it up. You are not weak. And it is not in your head. Your biology is reacting exactly the way it was designed to react to a perceived threat.
Mm-hmm.
And it highlights why holistic, integrated care that addresses the mind and the body simultaneously is the only viable future for treating chronic pain.
It is a complete paradigm shift in how we view human suffering.
It really is. And I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, something that pushes just beyond the boundaries of the clinical data we reviewed today.
Okay, what is it?
We've just explored in deep detail how the brain's neuroplasticity allows intense emotional trauma and fear to physically rewire the nervous system to generate chronic pain.
Right.
But consider the inverse. Could experiencing profound, unexpected joy or cultivating a deeply held, unshakable sense of emotional safety physically alter our cellular makeup to catalyze physical healing?
Wow.
If fear can break the internal alarm system, could moments of genuine awe and connection be the exact biological medicine required to rebuild it?
That is a beautiful thought. If the body keeps the score of our trauma, it must also keep the score of our healing, our joy, and our safety.
Absolutely.
The next time your joints ache after a deeply exhausting week, or a completely normal sound makes you jump out of your skin, remember, your brain isn't broken.
It's just doing its best to protect you.
Right. It is just acting like a very dedicated, albeit overzealous, bodyguard that needs to be gently taught that the war is over. Give your nervous system some grace and know that rewiring it is not just a theory, it is a biological certainty. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. Take care of yourselves and keep learning.